What is up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy Show. Now, before we go ahead and get started, I want to go ahead and tell you guys about Disrupt Week. Now, Disrupt Week is an amazing, amazing event. It's a week-long, yes, you heard me right, a week-long networking entrepreneurship-based event in San Juan, Puerto Rico. My God, you want to go network with somebody? Go network in paradise. Network in San Juan, Puerto Rico. From October 19th to October 26th, Disrupt and Build Your Empire are hosting this event, Disrupt Week, to help bring 50-plus speakers and 500-plus attendees together to network and make the world a better place. Now, if you want to come to this event and listen from speakers like Anthony Delgado, Chris Delgado, Casey Adams, John Malott, Alex Quinn, Sam Bakhtiar, Stephen Campolo, the list goes on and on and on and on. If you want to hear from people like this, go ahead and hit me up in my DMs on Instagram at @Chase_Henderfit. Let's go to Puerto Rico, baby. Let's make it happen. Now, that's it for that. Let's continue on with the show.
Welcome to the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy Show, where we speak with elite individuals and top performers and sing what it takes to stay healthy and get wealthy. Are you ready to be elite? Are you ready to be part of the 1%? Well, then without further ado, let's get it. What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy Show. Today is another elite episode with another elite entrepreneur. Man, I'll tell you what, this guy's story is absolutely incredible. He is a recovering addict turned TEDx speaker and entrepreneur. Yeah, I know. Crazy, but you gotta wait to hear the story. And guess what? He is grinding his ass off while also being a single father. So for all of you who think, oh, I've got this excuse, you got no excuse anymore. This guy is grinding, single father. He is killing it. Man, I cannot wait for you guys to meet him and hear his story. It is Mr. Jimmy DeFalco. Jimmy, how you doing today?
Yo, Chase. Hey, man. Thanks so much for having me on, brother. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you coming on the show, man. I mean, we've interacted on social media and, you know, being connected in SocialX. Now, I've heard your story a couple times, and it's so powerful. And then we've connected on the phone. I knew I had to have you on the show. I knew you'd be able to impact so many lives by telling your story on this podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. I'm excited to share it, and you know, hopefully change some people's perspective on, you know, what they're going through in their lives currently. So,
absolutely. So for those of you who do not know who you are, Jimmy, why don't you go ahead and tell a little bit? We'll just tell your story. What is your story? What has gravitated so many people towards you, and you've really taken that story to help inspire the masses?
Yeah, so I'll just kind of, you know, go back to the beginning, right? I always like to say, you know, a lot of people, most people have seen the movie. I grew up in like the Wolf of Wall Street type of environment. My father made a ton of money, millions of dollars each year, but he also partied with hookers, like pretty much on a weekly, if not daily basis, right? And a lot of this was done in front of me. And as a kid, I thought like I had the most blessed life. You know, I thought I had the coolest dad, the best setup, you know, riding around in limos, yachts, going to World Series games in New York City. I thought it was the best. It wasn't only till I got older did I realize how much growing up in that type of environment really affected me, right? Because, you know, all of our decisions, every single thing that we do, right, it's dictated by our beliefs and our values, right? What we believe in, who we are, what we value. It's, you know, whether you're going to wake up at 6 a.m. when the alarm goes off or hit the snooze 10 times, you know, that's what you value, right? And my beliefs and values were centered around money, drugs, girls, partying, and fighting. Like, that's literally the path I saw to becoming a man. And like the path I saw to success and happiness as well, because my father was doing all this crazy shit, but you know, he had all of this success, multiple houses, all these things. So I looked at him and I'm like, all right, man, I want to be just like him. Right. So, you know, my father gave me my first beer around like 8 or 9. I smoked weed with my father the first time around like 16 and, started snorting like Xanax and coke with him around 19 years old. Yeah, so it was, and not only that, so when I mentioned the World Series game. So when I was 14, my father took us, me and my younger brother, he was 10 or 11 at the time, to New York City to see the Yankees play in the World Series. The Yankees lost to the Diamondbacks, I remember. You know, I'm 14 years old. Baseball's life. I'm all sad and depressed. So instead of my father going to like buy me like a new outfit or new shoes or some ice cream or something, what a normal father would do. He gets me wasted in the limo and buys me a professional escort, a hooker, at 14 years old.
Whoa.
Yeah, man. So not only that, like after I was done, he like went in the room after I was done. And this all happened like in front of my 10-year-old little brother, you know? So wow. My father didn't really know how to show me love, like the conventional way. I don't want to paint my father as like a terrible guy, because it sounds like terrible things that he did, which they were obviously, but he just didn't. He was raised in a crazy environment as well, and what you don't know, you don't know. So
right, you can only do what you know, right?
Exactly. So you know, I try to come in place for my father now from a place of understanding instead of a place of judgment, right? So but this quickly, all of these things really shaped my belief in my value system. You know, I went to Florida State University from 04 to 08, go Noles. And, you know, I had a whole bunch of crazy experiences there that you think would have changed me. For one, and I'm just telling these stories to kind of provide some context into, you know, the person that I used to be. Before I became an addict, before I got into pills, I was an alcoholic pretty much, but I wasn't the type of alcoholic who had to drink every single day. I was the type of guy who I would drink on Friday through Sunday or Thursday through Sunday, I would just get completely obliterated and blacked out. Like, we would take GHB for fun, like the date rape drug. Like, we would chug the date rape drug on top of alcohol, like purposefully for fun times. And Yeah, exactly. So we were just nuts. And it was a sophomore year. I was in ATO. We went to a fraternity party and I was pretty drunk, but my friend was pretty drunk. He gets pulled over, gets a DUI in my car. Right. I don't remember any of this, by the way. Like, I literally don't remember anything until I woke up in jail in the fetal position on the floor. Only information I have is what my roommate told me, what was in the police report. So roommate gets pulled over, gets a DUI. I'm like a mile away from my house. So I can only assume in my head, I guess, I thought, I'm okay to go home. So while there's two or three cop cars behind me arresting my friend, I get out of the car, I walk to the driver's seat, and I just fucking pull away. Yeah, with the cops like still sitting behind me, wasted, blacked out. No idea what was going through my head. Obviously nothing logical. Wow. So then the cops immediately go to pull me over. I didn't try to run. I pulled right over. They pulled me out of the window. I got two assaults on an officer throughout the process, because I kind of resisted arrest and everything like that. And then I got a DUI and two fake IDs. So the arrest on an officer, they were felony counts, right? And I remember waking up in jail. I was like, bro, like, what happened? Why are we here? Because we were both in jail. We both got a DUI. He's like, bro, you got a DUI. I'm like, then why are you here? I thought you were driving. And he was like, yeah, this is what you did. I'm like, bullshit. Like, I didn't believe it until, you know, one of the COs told me. And so that summer, all my friends went to Spain, which I was supposed to go study abroad with them. I couldn't go. I was stuck on felony probation and going to Leon County Jail, doing 45 10-hour work days. Yeah, so it wasn't even like community service. I had to go dress out in like black and white stripes with like the orange vest and go with a correctional officer and just do whatever they told you to do out in the county somewhere for 450 hours while my friends were partying in Spain. Now, you know, you think that would – yeah, it was – I had to like ride my bike there and shit too, because I had no car.
Right.
So, you know, you would think that would start to make me change, but even on felony probation, I was only 20 at the time. I was still going out three or four times a week using a fake ID. I would smoke weed for two weeks and then stop for 2 weeks before I had to go see my PO. And it was all because I just thought my parents would bail me out. You know, I just thought whatever situation I got in, like, my dad would save me, you know? So I urge any parents that are out there listening to this, or any future parents, like, you obviously want to do the thing that you think you're helping your kid by bailing him out of bad situations, But the best thing you can do for your kid is kind of letting him figure it out on his own and work through it and face the consequences that he's supposed to face. So now I could have went to prison for 4 or 5 years. So thank God he, yeah, assault on an officer is a pretty serious charge. So thank God my dad had some money, paid for a good lawyer. My senior year, this tooth right here, you guys can't see, obviously, it's a podcast. This tooth right here is a fake tooth. It's an implant. My buddy gave me a Xanax, and I wasn't going to take it till the next morning, but I was walking out of the door. It caught my eye before we went to the club. I was like, ah, screw it. I took the Xanax. We went out, partied in Tallahassee. And the next morning, I wake up feeling like dog shit. And I remember I took a piss, and I looked in the mirror, and I didn't even realize it until I saw it. My whole entire front tooth and half of my other front tooth was completely gone. It was like a scene from like The Hangover. I was like, ah, what the fuck? And I was like, what happened? What happened? They're like, we don't know. You think you fell on a table. And then we confirmed later that day that I was at my buddy's house and I just fell and hit my head on the table. And yeah, just, you know, again, like after I got a new tooth, my dad paid $5,000 or $7,000 for a new tooth. And I was like, oh, you know, no harm, no foul. And kept on doing what I was doing. Now, when I graduated from college, my whole life was mapped out. I knew exactly what I was going to do, where I was going to go, how I was going to get there. I was going to start working for my father. He owned an advertising agency for car dealerships. He was going to retire in 3 to 5 years. I was going to take over the company. I was going to make more money, fuck more girls, party harder than he ever did. It was going to be epic. I couldn't wait, right? And then in 2008, when the market crashed, my family lost absolutely everything in like the matter of 6 to 12 months. You know, the houses, the cars, the status, the lifestyle, everything gone. My father made a lot of money, but he always spent more than he made. He thought he was going to always be making that money for his entire life. And when everything dried up and the economy crashed, he, you know, only had a couple hundred grand saved up. And with the bills that we had, it all disappeared very, very quickly. So this was very difficult on everybody in the family, but especially on me. I'm the oldest of 5 kids. Only one graduated from college. So my father asked me to open up a company in my own name because he had to shut his down due to so much debt. And I kind of knew it was a bad idea, but my mother and my 2 brothers and 2 sisters had no form of income. So I almost felt obligated to do this to kind of save the family, or they wouldn't have a place to live or have food to eat. So I opened the company. We started working together for about 18 months or so. It was a grind, man. It was, my dad was in and out of jail while this, for like online with like on the phone with my other dad from jail, trying to like communicate and tell him things. Cause I didn't know much. I was a 21-year-old kid. And so my dad gets out of jail and he's kind of handling like the finances and everything like that part of the business. And I get a letter in the mail from the IRS, and I owe the IRS and me, because it was my company, even though my father was operating it, $40,000+ in payroll taxes. So,
holy shit.
Yeah. So my father wasn't paying the payroll taxes. He told me he was taking care of them. Obviously he wasn't. So quickly I consulted with my mom, of course, made sure she was okay with it. And then I was like, that's it. I'm shutting the company down. So I quickly dissolved the corporation, you know, contacted all of our clients, told them we weren't in business anymore. And this threw my father into a rage, man, like psycho. And he was already pretty bad because of the situation our family was in.
Of course.
So he essentially started leaving me threatening voicemails, text messages. So I just had to block his number. I just blocked his number, thought that was the end of it. And then one morning at like 5 or 6 a.m., I hear, boom! Where is he? Where is he? And I knew immediately it was my dad. And I knew immediately he was there to come fight me. You know, he was mad that I closed the company down. And my whole entire life, like, my dad was a professional boxer. He was like a wrestler in Jersey, where it's really big up there. And plus, it was just a crazy motherfucker. So I was always kind of scared of my dad. But at that point, I realized, like, all right, he's getting older. You know, I'm like 24, 25, like in my prime, like it's time to end this shit. So I went out there and I really didn't want to fight my dad. Right. I remember he was like in this long hallway when I stepped out of my room, and I was like, I'm right here. And he comes charging at me, swings like a sloppy hook. I step back and I grab him in a headlock. And at this point, again, it's my father. I don't really want to fight him. So I kind of had just throw like a few kind of like light jabs as he's in the headlock. And I'll never forget what he did next, because I just remember the look in his eyes. He was so psychotic. And he goes, "That's all you got, motherfucker." And at that point, man, I just started wailing on him. Just bop, bop. Probably about after four or five like massive blows. My roommate's pit bull comes up, bites me in the ear. I have like a hole through the back of my left ear still. It's healed up now, but you can see the scar. And when I dropped my dad, he was passed out cold. So there's blood all over me. There's blood all over my father, both of ours. And I remember having to pick my father up, like from under the shoulders, drag him out of the house to the driveway, waiting for the cops to come pick him up. Now, I know this seems like a pretty fucked up situation, right? Like, I can tell by your face, Chase.
Holy shit.
Like, imagine having to like knock your father out cold, and like your whole entire life that you had just being the rug just ripped out from under you. And I lost my identity. I didn't know who I was anymore. You know, I didn't know like who cared for me anymore besides my mother. It was a whole bunch of whirlwind of emotions, and it was a lot of adversity. And I want your listeners to understand that, you know, in face of adversity, we all have a very important choice to make. You know, you can either like soak in that adversity and allow it to make you bitter and watch your life go on a quick downward spiral from that bitterness, or you can focus all of that negative emotion, that negative energy, into getting better so you don't allow any situations like this to occur in your life again. So in face of adversity, you can either get bitter or better. Those are your only choices. And what's going to dictate that is the next three things I'm about to discuss, because no matter what situation you're in, right? No matter if it's good, bad, or indifferent, you always have control of these three things, and no one can take these three things away from you. That's what you focus on, right? At this time, I was focused on everything my family had lost, all of the pain that we're having, you know, just everything that my family was going through, all the negative shit. That's what I was focused on. The second thing is what the story you tell yourself about the experience you're going through, like what does that mean to you? So we all get to pick and choose the story that we tell ourselves about the situation that we're currently experiencing, right? Like two people, you've had two people maybe go to a party or go to an event before, and those two people can walk away with a completely different experience from the same event because they get to pick and choose the story that they tell themselves from that event. So I chose that this meant that God hated us. I chose that this meant that my life was going to be full of pain and suffering. I chose to play the victim in that moment. Poor me, look at my life, right? And then the last thing is what you do next, right? So what you focus on, what the story means to you, and what you do next are three things that you always have control over. No one can take that from you. And so what I decided to do next was party off to change the way I felt about my current circumstances, because I was lost, I was suffering, I was in pain. And so I started drinking even more than I had before. And I moved to downtown Orlando, which I'm where I'm from. I had a good job at the time. I moved into a high rise with my buddy, and I just started drinking uncontrollably, man. Like I would black out 9 out of 10 nights. I remember when I made a post or something a while back. I was like, I used to black out 9 out of every 10 nights. And my roommate commented, he's like, I wasn't there for that one time. Like the one time I didn't black out, he was saying like, he wasn't there. Cause like,
damn.
Yeah. Cause like I blacked out every time. So it used to be to party and to have fun, cause that's what I saw my dad do. And I was just following his footsteps, but now it was really to mask the pain. Mm-hmm. So I started getting into coke a lot at this time. So I was like, okay, I'm falling on my face. I'm doing this stupid shit. And so in my brain, like the coke helped keep me somewhat level headed, right? So I could drink my face off all night, snort a few lines of coke, and still be able to walk and function and talk to girls and stuff. So at this point, I'm really into coke, smoking weed every day, drinking 4 or 5 times a week, thinking I'm having a good time. But I'm really just looking back on it, I was suffering in so much pain. And this is when I met the my ex, the mother of our two children. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, Anthony and Angelo. And when she told me she was pregnant, man, I lost it. Like, I was 27 years old. I wasn't ready to have a kid. I didn't want to have a kid. I was ready to party and just keep on living my bachelor lifestyle. But, you know, eventually I wised up to, you know, I was like, all right, I got to be a man. I got to step up and handle my responsibilities. So I eventually, after telling her, actually, this is horrible, I told her I wasn't going to be around. I told her I wasn't going to be a father to the kid. I told her if she had him, she had to raise, because I wanted an abortion. I told him if she had him, she was going to raise her on herself. And dude, I still get like knots in my stomach, like to this day, thinking that like what type of person I had to be to do something so terrible and just so shitty, and to let that happen, you know, let my son grow inside of her for like 2.5-3 months, letting her think I wasn't going to be around. Finally, when I realized she was going to go through with the pregnancy, I begged and pleaded for forgiveness. She eventually took me back, and we moved into a nice house in the suburbs of Orlando in Lake Mary, literally like screened-in patio, white picket fence, literally. And I should have been really happy, right? But suffering occurs, right? Suffering can only occur when you think about how things are compared to how you think things should be, right? So you're saying always like, oh, like I should be married. I should be, like, I cared for her, but I was never really head over heels, like in love. So I was like, I should be married. I should be like really in love. I should be doing this in the right order. You know, I should have more in savings before I had a baby. Like, there's all these things. I'm comparing what I had at the time to where what I think things should be, and that creates a lot of suffering, right? So wherever you're at right now, just eliminate should be. Oh, I should be further along in my business. I should, like, don't. Like, that doesn't serve you. That doesn't benefit you. That's only going to put you in a negative state. And when you're in a negative state, you're going to act in a way that does not further your best interests. So I started comparing myself again to other people, other things, how things should be, and I got depressed. And I was taken out of the party scene. You know, I was in downtown, so I couldn't party anymore. And my neighbor had these pills called Oxycontin. Do you know what Oxycontin is?
Yeah. Yeah, I had to – it was either Oxycontin or Oxycodone. I had to take it for surgeries and stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, so pretty much for those of you who don't know, it's a pain pill. It's opiate-derived, which is – pretty much heroin made in a pharmaceutical. It's heroin in a pain pill. And I started snorting these, and I was already prescribed to Xanax for about 4 or 5 years at this point. So I started snorting the Oxy with the Xanax coupled together. And this cocktail, man, just made, I was in a complete stupor at all times. Within 4 to 6 months, you know, I had nothing left in my bank account. I was lying. I was cheating. I was for everybody that loved for me and that cared for me. And eventually, Julie saw what was going on. She sends me to rehab. While I'm in rehab, I lose the house I was renting because I couldn't work. I couldn't pay for it because I had no more savings left. And I wrecked my car right before I went into rehab. I couldn't get it out of like where it was towed to. And so eventually that car got repossessed. So for the second time in about 6 years, you know, I lost all of my material things again. So I get out of rehab, and I was sober for maybe 3 or 4 months. We got a condo together. Luckily, I still had my job. And again, I started like looking on social media, comparing how, oh my God, I'm almost 30. I should have this. I should have that. I should be further off. So again, that thinking made me just suffer. And so I reached for comfort again in pills. Julie saw eventually what was going on. She kicked me out. At this point, I had nowhere to go. I hadn't talked to my father in a good 5 years or so, but my friends wouldn't have me. My mom wouldn't have me. You know, she had my little brothers and sisters there. No one would take me in. So I ended up going to my father's house, which, looking back on it, I probably should have just slept on the streets. Because instead of trying to help me get my life back on track, he bought a lot of pills, a lot of coke, a lot of alcohol, and we partied together for a week straight. And when I say party, that's probably not the right word to use, because it was more of like numbing. Like, this was the most painful, the most, man, I, like, my hair still stand up on my arms, like, just thinking about the pain that I felt. Because I would get drunk, and then I would snort a few pills, I would go to sleep, and then when I would wake up, the pain was, like, so bad. I would literally just wake up, snort, like, a Xanax or a Seroquel, and just so I could go right back to sleep, right? Just so I didn't have to feel what I was experiencing, right? But I'm grateful for that pain that I experienced that week, and I'll tell you guys why in a minute. So at this point in my life, I'm like, all right, this is rock bottom. Things can't get any worse than this, right? And then I get a call from Julie, my ex. She's fucking pregnant again, right? She's like, I'm pregnant again, Jimmy. I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, I couldn't believe it. I had no house. I had no car. I got fired from my job because I went in there wasted. The week I was staying at my dad's, I didn't even remember going into my job. I woke up to an email the next day saying, you know, I was fired. Didn't even remember being there. And now I have one kid I couldn't take care of, a second one coming into my life. So I'm like, that's it. There's no possible way I can get my life on track. I'm too addicted to these pills. I'm in too much pain. There's too much work to do. I can't do it. So I started slitting my wrists. And I told one of my friends that I was doing this, and he called the cops and he got me Baker acted. Do you know what that is?
I'm familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah, so pretty much in the state of Florida, if someone is not breaking the law, but they're a harm to themselves or a harm to others potentially, they can hold them in a mental health facility for 72 hours.
Right, okay.
So when the cops came and picked me up, like, I was high on coke. I had, like, this stripper coming over that I messaged on Facebook. So, like, I was so mad that, you know, and just – I remember banging my head. Like, you only see, like, in the movies, in the back of the police car, like, up against that glass thing, like, until I was bleeding. And I was just completely lost all perception of actual reality and what I was experiencing. But – when I got in that mental health facility, I looked around and, you know, these people, you know, talking to themselves, just up at all hours of the night, screaming, yelling, doing crazy shit. I'm like, oh my God, like, how the hell did I end up here? Right? How? And then while I was in there, like, I had this vision, right? That if I kept on doing what I was doing, I would end up dead soon. And I frankly didn't care what happened to me at that point. I was like, fine, kill me, take me. But then I had another vision that my sons would follow in my footsteps if I kept on doing what I was doing and I ended up dead. So that got to me, right? I didn't care what happened to me, but I cared about them. So right then and there, I made a decision. I'm like, all right, that's it. When I get out of here, I'm going to change. I'm going to turn everything around. And so I got out and, you know, it was really hard to gain everybody's trust back. No one believed in me for a very long time. And over the next 18 months, I literally transformed everything about my life, my personal life, the relationships, most of them I helped rebuild. My son was born. Me and Julie were doing great. I had a physical transformation, a spiritual and emotional. I transformed in every single way. But I got all the material things back. But I still wasn't fulfilled. I still really wasn't happy. I'm like, man, like I went through all of that, like, just for this, like, just for like a normal sales job and a normal, like, it wasn't bad, but like, I knew there had to be more. Right. And so most people never find their passion or their purpose because they never ask themselves the question. Right. So I started asking myself repeatedly every single day, like, what's my passion? What's my purpose? Like, what am I meant to do with my life? And if you ask yourself a question enough, your subconscious mind will note it, will realize that it's important to you to find this answer. So even when you're not consciously focused on it or consciously thinking about it, your subconscious mind is scanning all of your past experiences, looking for an answer, right? Looking for what is your passion? What is your purpose? So after about a month or so, it just hit me out of nowhere. I was like, holy shit. Like, I remember that week at my father's house, falling on my knees, screaming at God, like, why, God? Like, why are you doing this to me? Why? And, like, I finally had an answer to that why, right? Even though God wasn't doing that to me, I was putting myself in those situations. But I had a why as to why I was going through all of that. And that was to help others get through their own adversity. That was to help others master their mindset, build their confidence, transform their mental and their physical life, right? So at that point in time, I was like, holy shit. I was like, the story that I have, it's pretty incredible. I was like, I'm going to become a motivational speaker and a life coach to help other people turn their life around. So once I realized that's what I wanted to do, I was like, but holy shit, like, how did I create this massive shift in my life in such a short period of time? I was kind of just going through it all like instinctively. Like I had no plan. I was just doing what I thought I should do to better my life. And so I kind of had to reverse engineer. So I came up with a few like core principles that really helped me transform. And then I was like, okay, well, that's cool. Now that helped me, but I want to learn how to create change on a universal level. So then I started learning about like NLP and different ways to manipulate and transform the subconscious mind. And I got really into that, became certified in NLP. And then, for the past like 2.5 years or so, I've been a full-time, coming up on 9 months now, just full-time speaker and coach. I've started to do corporate training workshops to help people, because I've been in sales my whole life, to help people with sales skills and just to master their, people think if you grind hard, you'll always do better. No, it's like, if you take care of yourself first and make sure you're in a peak state at all times, you're going to be better at whatever you do. So that's what I've been doing for the past 2.5 years, man. I'm really just trying to get my message out there to as many people as possible to affect and help change as many people as I can. I know that was kind of long winded, man, but yeah, that's kind of my story in a nutshell.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sitting here like listening to everything, and the way that you tell your story, like I felt like I was there with you, like going through the steps of the process, and even then, like I can't even fathom what that must have been like. I mean, because I know I've had my ups and downs with, you know, in my life with family, whatever, but I'm honestly just speechless right now. I know there's a lot of other people out here listening, just were in awe of how you were able to take such a situation that would literally destroy a lot of people and keep them there, but you're able to turn that into something better and actually use it as a stepping stone for you to get to the next level in your life that you're at today. And that's absolutely amazing. And it really just came down to that. Was it just like a moment where you realized like, I need to turn around now? Or was it like a progression of realization?
It was kind of a little bit of both, like, to be honest, because, you know, it was that moment when I had that vision, when I was in the correct facility, like I need to change this shit around, right? Like I need to do that. But it wasn't like all easy, like from there. So like I would constantly like, okay, just one pill, have done 1 week, battle. It was a battle, man. And so it was kind of like that one moment initiated like the beginning of the change, but then it was a progression from there. Realizing so at that time at my father's house, two things happened there, right? First of all, I finally started, like, my whole entire life, I realized, I thought that it was, you know, my father's fault, the economy's fault, bad luck, God, like blaming all these people for the life that I was experiencing. And for the first time in my life, I started to take a little bit at that time of responsibility for where I was at. I learned to take full responsibility eventually, but even taking a little bit of responsibility, that hurt so fucking bad that it started to inspire some change in me. Right. And like everyone in the short term, right. In the short term, people want to blame because it gives them an excuse to not feel bad. Right. But the blaming, two things happen. You know, you don't feel the pain. You don't learn any lessons. You don't realize where you went wrong. So you're going to keep on making the same mistakes over and over again. And although you avoided the pain of accepting your mistake, you're going to keep on experiencing pain from bad decisions over and over and over again. So blaming is the brain's way of kind of saving yourself from that pain. But if you take accountability for that pain and you really sit in it, and but don't allow it to take over you. You can't, you know, sit in this pain for 6 months because that's not beneficial for you. You really got to take in the pain, experience the pain, realize where you went wrong, learn from your mistakes. And at that point, pills weren't an escape anymore. Now I associated pills with like pain and struggle and heartache and losing things. So once I was able to kind of take responsibility and accountability, although it hurt like a motherfucker, that was the only thing that started my change process. Because instead of linking the pills to an escape from reality now, I link the pills to pain and heartache.
Right. And like a big thing that, you know, you preach on, like actually what you were talking about here, is that it all really comes down to your thoughts. Like it was the association going from the mental link to pills for one thing and switch that link to another thing. And that really goes to show how big of a role your brain plays when it comes to just your perception of life or just the progression of your life as a whole. I mean, you're a fantastic example of that. But one of the ways that I know you put a lot on social media about this, and you mentioned it briefly too. One of the ways that you were able to build up your mindset was you first built up your body. And I know you're a big proponent on fitness, like being one of those things that really saved your life. You know, maybe you can go a little bit into that. And like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, man. So, you know, fitness does three things for me, right? It's a confidence builder, it's a mood shifter, and it's a tone setter. Right. So, you know, the gym helps build my confidence. If I'm pissed off, I go to the gym. If I'm happy, I go to the gym and I feel better every time. I never have a workout and I leave and I'm like, man, I wish I didn't do that. You know, never. It doesn't happen. And it's a tone setter, man. So like, however my workouts go is how my focus is how my eating is. It's how my sleep is. It's how, you know, my patience, how much patience I have. Right. So, you know, the gym does everything. And I believe, so your life will always align, right, with who you believe yourself to be internally. And that's the reason why I think so many drug addicts always relapse, right? So like, let's equate, you know, we all have a level of goodness that or success that we believe we deserve, like internally. It's a subconscious belief that we have. And let's say that's like equal to like a temperature, right? I know like Tony Robbins and Ed Mylett talk about this too. And I've experienced it many times throughout my journey. So like if you're usually living at 75 degrees, a few bad things happen, you'll do whatever you have to do in your power to get back to that 75 degree level. Mm-hmm. But the same thing happens inversely. If, you know, things start going really good, you'll self-sabotage yourself. If, you know, you start living at 80, 85, 90 degrees, consciously, you're like, yeah, this is awesome, this is great. But subconsciously, you're like, whoa, 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 no. You're supposed to be a drug addict loser. You don't deserve this. So although it may seem like random events, you'll actually set those events in motion somehow in some way, and eventually you'll be right back down to that 75-degree level. And the gym is the easiest way to shift that internal identity for yourself. It's the easiest way to smash limiting beliefs. You know, when your brain is screaming, like, drop it, it hurts. And you say, shut the fuck up. And you rep out three or four more. Like, that's just, and you're just like, wow, I did it. Like, my brain told me to stop. It really hurt. I didn't listen. And I got four more. So you just smashed through a limiting belief right there. You just took control of your brain right there. And you didn't allow it to dictate what you did. You took control and you told your brain what you were going to do. And it's always going to fall in line. You know, it can't fight back. So it's only going to fight back with thoughts that aren't true. So it's the easiest way to kind of shift that internal identity to break through some limiting beliefs. And what happens when you start to break through some of these limiting beliefs is, you know, it's easier to transform your body, I think, than it is your mind. Actually, I know, in my experience at least. It's easier to transform your body than it is your mind. But as you start to transform your body and break, like, oh, I'll never be able to bench 225. Shit, 6-8 months into working out, boom, you're benching 225 for 10. And you're like, man, like, I told myself I was never going to do this. Like, I wonder what else I'm lying to myself about. I wonder what else I could do that I'm telling myself I'm not capable of. So like little things, like I would tell myself, I'm not a morning person. I'm not this. I don't like reading. I don't like this, you know? And once I woke up at 5 a.m. for 30 days straight, that wasn't true anymore. I was no longer, you know, not a morning person. You know, once I read for 30 minutes a day, I didn't despise reading as much anymore. That wasn't true anymore. So the gym opened my mind to challenging other limiting beliefs that I have elsewhere in my life. So it really opened the door to total transformation. And I always say, I lift for the mental and the emotional gains. Like the physical gains are fucking icing on the cake, right? But I really lift for the confidence, for the tone setting, for the mood shifting, right? That's what I really lift for. And I didn't know this at the time. I only learned this about probably about a year and a half ago. But so physical activity has been linked to increasing neuroplasticity, right? Neuroplasticity is pretty much your brain's ability to make internal changes, right? So when you have a habit, you have this one neural pathway that always fires, right? Let's say you get home and you're used to smoking weed and playing video games all day. That neural pathway is going to fire when you get home. And it's going to try to get you to smoke weed and play video games. Why? Because your brain's not designed to keep you happy, to keep you successful. Your brain's designed to keep you alive. And you've been doing that shit for the past 3 years. So your brain knows that if you keep on doing that, you're going to stay alive because you haven't died yet. So it wants to keep you in those habits, whether they're destructive for you or not. So once you stop and once you resist that urge over, you know, a few weeks time to not do that anymore, and you're replacing that with something else, eventually your brain's going to go, oh, okay, he doesn't need this pathway to fire anymore. The pathway's still going to be there, still going to be active, but it's not going to be firing and wiring anymore. So this new pathway is going to start firing for this new habit that you developed. That's why it feels so uncomfortable when you're trying to drop an old habit and pick up a new one, because your brain's neurochemistry and the physical changes are literally happening in your brain. So physical fitness allows your brain to make these changes more easily, which I think is pretty cool.
That's so cool. That's yeah. I mean, honestly, one of the best things that I've ever done in my life was really get into fitness. You know, I'm really getting into the fitness realm now, but I've noticed kind of in my life too, where the good parts, like the parts where I feel like I'm progressing or, you know, things are going my way, have been when I took my health under control and I went to the gym. I pushed past those limiting beliefs. You know, I wasn't eating dog shit every day. I wasn't going out and like drinking my face off every night of the week. You know, it's doing those things in the gym and taking control of your body that's ultimately going to take control of your mind. And what's really cool is like the neuroplasticity part, you know, because I have a little bit of knowledge of this just from college, but you know, even then, like, it's still really cool to hear about and talk about the fact that, you know, you're able to use your movements to completely just like physically change your mind completely, which is insane. What are some other ways that you've really, you know, influenced that, the improvement of your mindset? You know, have there been other things, maybe like meditation or other practices that you've really implemented to really change that?
Yeah. So, I meditate sometimes. I need to start making a more consistent practice, but visualization is a key staple to my morning routine. Like if I don't have my morning routine, I'll give you a little bit about what it looks like first. You know, I wake up, I'll chug like 20 to 30 ounces of water with some apple cider vinegar. Yeah. That's why I put it in the water. So it's not like a straight shot.
Right. I used to do the straight shot and I don't know why I ever did that. That was,
yeah, nah, I put it in the water, maybe like a little bit of sugar in there or something. But, and then I chug that. I have my coffee. I go out on my patio. I have a nice backyard and I just listen to some positive video because psychologists have proven that your mentality for the day is shaped within the first 8 minutes, like your mood for the day. Right. Whoa. So if you're waking up and looking at your DMs and your emails and you're reacting, I see that you do that, Chase. If you wake up doing that first thing, who knows? They may be good DMs, they may be bad, But, you know, most likely if you're running a business, you're in a career, like it's probably not going to be the best news. You know, when you're in a business, you always have problems to deal with, fires to put out, things like that. So I try not to look at my phone for the first 30 to 45 minutes, listen to some Tony Robbins, Eric Thomas, Gary Vaynerchuk, Ed Milet, Andy Frisella, one of them. And even if I'm not really paying attention, I stretch a little bit and do some yoga. It's still seeping into my subconscious mind. And I attribute a large portion of my transformation to just those videos, man. Cause at first, like my negative thinking was just so bad, right? I would just negative think all the time. So I literally had to rewire and reprogram the way that I viewed myself and the way that I viewed the world. And it's not going to work after a couple hours of listening to some positive videos, right? You literally have to feed your mind. I stopped listening to music like for a while, and just every car trip, every time I had a second, just dumping some positivity into my brain. And then eventually I started to actually apply it, right? I started to actually apply what I heard. You're not going to thinking negative way for 28 years. You're not going to apply something you heard in a 30 fucking minute video.
Right.
No, it's just not going to happen. It's not how the human brain works. So I do that. And then the yoga and meditation, then I do this visualization practice. I got from Tony Robbins, but it's, I kind of put my own twist on it. And so this is really cool. So your brain doesn't know the difference between a feeling you get from a real life experience and a feeling that you get from thought alone, right? Your brain doesn't know the difference if it's a thought or it's actually happening. You ever think about something bad and your stomach gets in knots and you start sweating on your forehead and like in almost immediately when you start thinking these negative thoughts, because your mind thinks it's happening right now. Your brain does not know the difference. So using this visualization where I focus on three things that I'm grateful for in the past, and then I focus on three things that I want to manifest, that I want to happen in my life, it puts me in the state first thing in the morning of gratitude, of success, of acceptance, of abundance, of prosperity. And we all act in accordance with how we feel. Right? People say, you know, thoughts create your reality. And it sounds like some like hippie mumbo. Oh, if I think differently, that's really not, people misconstrue your thoughts create your reality. So what people mean when they say that, and I don't think most people even understand what they mean when they say that. But so, you know, you have thoughts, right? And those thoughts are going to create emotions. And those emotions are going to dictate how you feel, right? And the state that you're in. And you're always going to act in accordance with how you feel or the state that you're in. So in that way, your thoughts are creating your reality because they're dictating the actions you take and they're changing the results or the outcomes that you're going to experience. So that's how your thoughts actually create your reality, because thoughts lead to emotions, lead to feelings, lead to actions, lead to outcomes and results. So by visualizing and tricking your brain into thinking that these things, because you, like at first I was dead broke. I had nothing. I had no prospects. I didn't know how I was going to build my business. But I didn't focus on that. I focused on seeing myself on a TEDx stage. I focused on coaching people and helping them transform their lives, and the satisfaction I got seeing transformation in someone else and how happy they were. You know, I focused on being an amazing father to my kids. And if you can do that the first thing every day, you're not going to be in a place of lack, a place of frustration, a place of I'm not good enough and negative thoughts. You're going to be in that other place that I discussed of prosperity and abundance. And if you're going to act in accordance with being in that state of prosperity and abundance, eventually you're going to manifest what you're actually visualizing with hard work. Of course, you can't just visualize and sit on the couch.
Right.
You know? So a visualization has been a huge tool for me, and it's a good state shifter too. So if you ever are in a negative state, just close your eyes for a minute and think about something that you're grateful for in the past. Like, put yourself in that moment, right? Like, actually in that moment, what were you, you know, what were you wearing? Like, what did it smell like? Who were you with? You know, what did you say? You got to put yourself in that moment. And it's a practice, just like meditation. It's going to feel weird at first. Some days I'm like, ah, that sucked. And some days I can bring myself to literal tears, picturing rolling up to my mom's house with like a brand new Mercedes and like, here, mom, here's 10 grand a month, you know, quit your job. Like stuff like that, man. So visualization is definitely a huge component.
I love that. Well, now I know, because I'd always heard people saying like, okay, you know, in the morning, you know, that first little bit dictates your day, but I didn't realize that it's like was 8 minutes. I didn't realize it was that small. So I need to work on that. But I mean, that's crazy how big of a role visualization can play when it comes to what state you're in throughout the day. And I actually remember reading something. It was a study where they analyzed the brain waves, like the brain activity of athletes, like visualizing doing a race and then actually doing a race. And they found like the same neural pathways were firing, like everything was the same. So when you mentioned that, like, you know, your brain doesn't know the difference, like I knew immediately, I was like, oh yeah, 100%. Because I mean, it's been proven, like this has been scientific, well, you know, you can't say proven science, whatever, but like it's been shown that that's the case. And it's so crazy to think how big of a role just your thoughts alone can play in the outcome of your life. That's absolutely insane.
Exactly. And that's what I teach people to do, right? I teach people how to take accountability and responsibility for where they are today and the person that they want to become, because we can all become whoever the fuck we want to be. Like, you would think it's impossible. Like 4 years ago in November, I was in a mental health facility, man, strung out on Xanax and opiates, you know? And, you know, now I'm running a successful business. I'm a TEDx speaker. And I didn't think any of this was possible on top of being a single father. So you can, I teach people how to take ownership for where they are, maybe feel a little bit of that pain for a little bit. And then I give them actionable steps, tools, and resources to start reframing some of the limiting beliefs that they have, to start shifting some of the paradigms that they have in their life that are holding them back, right? Because so many people, they get some momentum, some good things happen, and then boom, they self-sabotage because they internally don't believe that they're worthy or that they're good enough. So I help people shift that internal identity so they can start getting, you know, the external results that they want in life.
So how do you go about reframing that though? I mean, that seems like a very meticulous process to be able to do that. Like what sort of techniques do you use to do that?
So, you know, visualization is obviously one of them, but let's say, so counter examples, right? So counter arguments is way. So if a client of mine has like a limiting belief, right? Like, I never win. I always lose. Like something like that, right? And for some reason, limiting beliefs are always absolutes, right? We have positive beliefs. When we have positive beliefs, they're never absolutes. Like men never listen. Women always flake. They're absolutes, and the positive ones aren't. It's just how we're wired, I think. But so if someone has the mentality like, oh, like no one ever likes me, right? No one. I'm not social public. Really? No one ever likes you, huh? Okay. No one has ever liked you in your whole entire life. Not one single person. They're like, well, there was this one. Okay, well, like, tell me about that time. And like, oh, well, I met this person and da-da-da-da-da, and we actually hit it off really good. I had a great connection. So I'm like, so what you just said, no one ever likes you or you don't get along with anybody, that's not true, because you just told me this great story about this great connection you have with this other person. They'd be like, well, yeah, I guess I did have a good connection with that person. And then so that just – it's a lot longer process than just that. But right. That's just how – that just plants the seed, right? That just gets the process started and just gets them starting to think a different way. You know, it'd be like, I'm like, okay, well, what did you do with that interaction that you weren't doing with other interactions? Be like, well, I was in a good mood because this happened. I'm like, okay, well, you can choose what mood you can be in. You don't always have to be in this mood that you're in now. And so counter arguments or counter examples are a great way to start reframing and reshifting limiting beliefs that people have about themselves and about how the world works.
I like that. That's cool.
Yeah.
I never thought about it that way, in the fact that all of our all of the negative thoughts are absolute. So I'm sitting here thinking about the negative thoughts I've had and the positive thoughts I've had. I'm like, holy shit, that's wild.
Yeah. Right.
That's insane. So, you know, going deeper into what you do, I know a lot of what you do involves, I mean, are these NLP practices? Because I know a lot of this, a lot of what you practice and preach, especially on, you know, on social media, you've got it on there, is that you practice NLP. And for a lot of people who don't know what NLP is, that's neuro-linguistic programming. If you don't know what it is, look it up. I didn't know what it was like 2 months ago. And then I looked it up, and I've been obsessed. This stuff is insane.
Yeah. So neuro-linguistic programming, like the definition I would give it, is modifying your belief system by rewiring how you talk to and think about yourself. Right. That's pretty much it. As I said at the beginning, all the actions we take and all the decisions we make are based on our belief and our value system. So if you can rewire your belief system by changing, you know, how you think about and talk to yourself, you can literally change almost everything about yourself. And it's not an overnight thing, right? It takes time. It takes time to do it. But
put in the reps.
But I would say it really depends, man. It depends where they want to go and how they want to get there, who they want to be, to whether I use more of kind of like the practical advice, like that helped me kind of dig myself out of the pit, or if I kind of start to use different neuro-linguistic programming techniques, because it just all like a case by case basis. But it's a mix of the two, of kind of like my own knowledge. That's why I think, you know, my coaching and my workshops and talks are so powerful, because not only like do I have the book knowledge as well, but like I've lived it, I've experienced it, I've applied some of these techniques before I even knew what NLP was, you know. So I kind of have a mixture of my own personal life experience, what I've learned, NLP, and just kind of mold them together.
That's wild. What's one NLP practice that you have found to be the most beneficial when it comes to working with a client or even with yourself? What's one of those practices that really worked, that you've seen has been very beneficial?
I wouldn't say it's a practice, but it's just their language, right? The way that they use, you lose their language, right? And so like the other day, a client texted me and they were like, what exactly did they say? And I don't know, they had just a negative connotation with the struggles that they were having. And they were like, I keep on slipping back into the pit, and I have to dig myself out every day. I was like, every time I think I have a little bit of momentum going, I slip back into the pit, and then I have to dig myself out. You know, that doesn't sound very, very good or very appealing, right? And it just doesn't sound like something anybody wants to go through. And it's, and you presuppose that, you know, you've done something bad to slip into the pit, like, bad Jimmy, you shouldn't have done that, right? So just by reframing what you say to yourself, instead of like, oh, I slipped back into the pit, be like, okay, I need to reset and start to reapply what got me to where I am. You know, like, instead of saying to slip back in the pit, I have to dig myself out, be like, okay, I have to reset now. I have to reset and reapply what I'm doing. And that just, it makes it a lot easier to be able to kind of shift your mentality when you talk to yourself in different ways like that.
I love that. I do that like every Sunday. I look at Sundays as like the day where it doesn't matter what happened the week before, whether it was good, bad, whatever. It's a complete reset. I got it from Brody. I do a complete reset, and then this whole next week is going to be a new thing. Doesn't matter what happened back. It could be good, bad, whatever, but start over again. I love that.
Yeah. So really just the language patterns, man, the language that we use, something big in NLP is presuppositions. So like you presuppose, so like even just like a simple, I'll just give you like a simple example. So, you know, the boy, you know, swam laps in the pool, right? So obviously a few of the things that you presuppose, boy, obviously he's male, right? You're going to presuppose that. That's obvious. But again, people are presupposing that just from the language, again, that he's young. You're going to presuppose that he's young because I said boy and not man, right? You're going to presuppose that he's able-bodied because he's swimming in a pool. But who knows? Nick Santanasso, I don't know how to say his last name.
Yeah.
he swims in pools. So, you know, that's just like you're going to assume that he has a family that has enough money to buy a pool or is in a nice area. You know, you're just going to assume all of these things. And if you grew up with a pool in your backyard, you're going to presuppose you swam in a pool in the backyard. If you grew up in a pool at your apartment community center, you're going to envision and presuppose him swimming in an apartment in a community center. So that's a very simple, basic example of presuppositions, but that's basically how it works. So we're preconditioned to think certain ways when we hear just even the simplest of sentences like that. And we kind of like take the sentences and then we fill in the blanks. But we take what we presuppose as actual truth when really we're just kind of filling in the blanks with our preconditioning.
Right. So when it comes to those presuppositions, it really is sitting down, like say somebody says something negative. It's looking between the lines and go, okay, is it actually negative? Like, did I just throw stuff in there? Or is there any way I can kind of switch the things that are in there already?
Exactly, dude. So we're always going to presuppose, right? There's right. No possible way to stop it. But what you have to do is be aware of what you're presupposing. And if it's not beneficial or if it's not in your best interest or if it's not benefiting you, to shift what you presuppose, right? So if you got an argument and someone said this, this, and that, and you obviously presuppose that it means that they hate you or it means that, like whatever, like you can shift that meaning of you filling in the gaps to where it's beneficial to you. So become self-aware. The next conversation that you have or the next book, whatever it is, of what you're presupposing, and ask yourself, okay, is this beneficial or detrimental to me? And then if it's detrimental, you know, kind of try and reframe and reshift that presupposition.
I could talk about this shit all day. This is so cool. This is what I'm saying, people. Like when I first heard like NLP, that's when I got obsessed. Yeah. I looked into it and I could sit here talk about it all day. But
one
I don't
last thing, one last thing, if you don't mind, dude. Just about
of course.
Beliefs. Like limiting beliefs come from generalizations, right? Limiting beliefs are basically just generalizations that we make. So we have your subconscious mind remembers everything, doesn't forget any conversation, not one word that was said ever since you were a baby. So we have all these different life experiences, right? And we tend to tell ourselves common stories from these different experiences. So we have all these experiences and all these stories that we dictate the meaning of from these experiences, and we kind of connect dots, right? Be like, okay, we have all these experiences, all these things, so that means this, right? And then we come up with a belief that of who we are and how the world works, and we take that belief to be absolute fact. This is who I am, this is how the world works, and that's it. Based on the information that you've received from your five senses. Right. But the world is a lot more than just our five senses. It's vibrations, it's frequencies. You know, there's a whole bunch of things going on around us that we can't perceive from our five senses. Right. So we take these generalizations from these different life experiences. We establish these belief systems. Right. And then we take those to be absolute fact. And that's actually what holds a lot of people back. Is, and we're going to generalize, right? That's how we learn new things. That's how we grow. That's how we develop. But again, ask yourself, are these generalizations that you're making about the world, about yourself, are they beneficial or detrimental to you? Right? And then that's what I do too. I take people through like, okay, if you think you're a bad person, right? Why do you think you're a bad person? Let's talk about the different experiences in which why you think you're bad. Right. And then I'll walk them through the progression and kind of help them reframe and reshift why they think they're not a good person.
That's wild.
Yeah.
God, this stuff is so cool.
I geek out on it, bro.
Damn, I need to get way more. I'm really considering getting NLP certified. Just
Nick update from Real Driven.
Yeah,
he's actually going to a 7-day seminar with some really high established lady. I was like, dude, send me that info because I want to go to one of those. So
yeah, no kidding. I think he was telling me it's like the course as a whole, like the 7-day thing, was like $5,000. But he like talked to the person, it's like one of his mentors, so she like cut him like a fat discount. And now he's doing this whole thing. He texted me and he's like, dude, you're not gonna believe what just happened. Like, oh my god, I'm so jealous of him. I'm like, I need that up here in Tallahassee.
I know, right?
That's crazy. So actually, question on that. So the whole reframing and shifting thing, you know, you were here in Tallahassee, you know, the culture here is like, and you know, I'm still here, Florida State and everything.
Kudos to you for being on a game day, bro. Be doing this like for real, man. I respect you a lot, bro, for going against the grain, dude. Like, I'm not even joking, man. Like, I respect you so much for not doing what everyone else is doing just to kind of like fit in or whatever it is, bro, and going against the grain and doing what you're going to do, doing what makes you happy and doing what's going to progress your life and get you to where you want to be, man. So mad respect, bro.
I appreciate that, but yeah, that came with pain. I mean, I'm not going to lie, you know, on Instagram, like my thing's Hender Fit. Well, before I started this whole thing, people call me, this is an actual thing, Hender Lit. Cause it was just, I was going out all the time. Like literally your same story. I had to drink something every single day, or else I felt off. I was partying my ass off. I would be at this we have a, you know, I'm in fraternity and they have a tailgate actually going on right now. I would have been there 3 hours early. Like, you know, that kind of thing. It was crazy. And I went down such a bad path, like mentally and physically. I was like overweight. I lost my girlfriend, failing my classes. I was, you know, I'm only here for a fifth year because of all that. And yeah, I really had to dig deep and look at myself and be like, okay, look, I can keep doing that stuff, or I can actually like take accountability for what I've done and, you know, make something of myself. So that's why I'm like, I'm super cool with sitting here and like doing, like, I could sit here and, you know, have just this conversation with you alone for hours and hours and hours.
Wow, for sure.
Tailgate. Cause I mean, like I've seen what that's brought me, and it's not what I want anymore. Like I you know, like a lot of the visualization, I see what I want. Now I want to go get that. So, you know, but yeah, I mean, kind of building into that, you know, going against the grain, how would you teach somebody who's, you know, at this party school type of vibe, how to reframe and reshift their mind to kind of go against the grain? Because I have had a couple people, I get a lot of people giving me shit for, you know, going against the grain, don't drink, don't whatever. But then I have had a handful of people come to me like, hey, dude, like I'm actually really struggling because I don't want to keep going out, but like, I feel like I have to.
Yeah. Okay. So I would, this is a path I actually had a coaching call this morning and I kind of walked him down, you know, this path, like, okay, let's say you keep on continuing to party and continuing to drink. Like, where is that going to lead you? What is that going to get you? What are you going to lose from that? You know, what possibly are, you know, just, I would kind of walk them down the path of the outcomes that they've experienced through like a series of questions. And based on their questions, I would have more questions from that. Basically just kind of detailing like what their future is going to look like, what they're going to lose, what they're not going to have, what their bank account's going to look like, all these things if they continue down that path. Then I'd be like, okay, well, let's decide you decide to go against the grain. Right. Obviously it would be hard at first. You would have you would have these people calling you a fucking pussy and you're not the same. Oh, you've changed.
I got where did the fun chase go? I got that a couple times.
Yeah, exactly. So but then I would ask them like, okay, if you do decide to do that, what is that gonna give you? Okay. It gives you more peace and freedom and a larger bank account. Okay, what can you do with more peace and freedom and a larger bank account? Oh, well, I'd be able to start the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy podcast. Okay. So by starting the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy podcast, what would that allow you to do? Oh, well, that would allow me to impact other people. Okay, how would impacting other people and making a positive impact on their life, how would that make you feel, Chase? Oh, that would make me feel really good about myself, right? Okay, so basically I would lead them down the path to how they would think, how they would feel going down the drinking path, and then I would lead them down the same path about the path that you're going down, right? And then once I do that, like, it seems so simple, right? It seems so clear, but when I actually have the conversation, it's like epiphanies happen, realizations hit, and they're like, ah, like, yeah, fuck that. I don't want to live that way anymore. And it's almost like an instantaneous shift.
I love that. God, yeah. If only I had met you like a year ago.
Hey man, you did it yourself, brother. You did it yourself.
Hey, I tried.
Yeah. For anybody trying to make a major change in their life, just kind of ask yourselves those same questions. Like, where is that going to lead you? What's that going to gain you? What is that going to lose you? How are you going to feel if you lose that thing? How are you going to feel if you gain this new thing? What will that feeling allow you to do, allow you to accomplish? Okay, you've accomplished that. What is that going to do for you? Keep on going deeper and deeper and deeper. And then you'll actually get to like the real reason eventually.
That's perfect.
Yeah, and once you get to that real reason about why they want to create that, and then eventually they'll get to like, my father, he died of alcoholism and this and that. And I really just want, my family's been struggling financially ever since then. And I really just want to be there for my family. And maybe they didn't even realize that yet, but I'll walk them through the progression to kind of pull that out of them.
Right. Oh man, what is it? There's something called, you pretty much hit it on the head. It's the 7 levels of why. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exact same. Like, that's what I did, like, towards the beginning to really get me to start going down this road, was, like, figuring out why I really, why I wanted to be successful. Because I'd always thought about, like, oh, I want to be successful, this, and that. And I had done, like, quote-unquote entrepreneurship for years, but I never made any progress because I didn't apply myself enough. But it wasn't until I did that exercise, like, really figuring out within me, like, you know, I want to be the source of like generational wealth for years to come. I don't want my parents to have to go through, cause we went through, we went from pinching pennies to doing well. And then 2008, we went down again. Then we're, getting back up, doing our thing, going through that roller coaster. I'm like, I don't want that to happen to my family ever again. I don't want that to happen to my future family ever. So that's what really, doing something like that really pushed me. It's like finding that internal motivation, that why, as to like what's going on. And like, once you realize that
That's what I'm saying. Once you connect with that, it's an instantaneous shift. You don't have to push yourself to do those little daily tasks anymore that's going to help get you there. You're literally pulled towards them. You want to do them because you know the outcome it's going to get you.
Right. And when you don't do it, you feel so shit. And you're like, okay, it's the end of the day, but I got so much shit I got to do. All right, I'm going to go do this right now.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's crazy. Exactly. God. Man, what an incredible conversation today, Jimmy.
Dang. It has been awesome, brother. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, so I got one last question. I love asking this question. So let's say you were the one running the interview, right? Mm-hmm. And you were interviewing Jimmy DeFalco. What would you ask?
Damn. Maybe what do I do? Jimmy, what do you do when your confidence drops and you do have limiting beliefs today? Because again, I'm pre-programmed to think in a negative way, man, for 28 years. So sometimes the lack of confidence and the limiting beliefs like creep back in a little bit, right? So how I combat that is, for one, it's self-awareness, right? So I have to be very aware. I have to think about what I'm thinking about, right? You actually have to think about what you're thinking about and identify those negative thoughts. And when you have those negative thoughts, those limiting beliefs, like, understand that you're pre-programmed and wired to think that way, and those thoughts aren't true, right? So again, your brain's main function is to keep you alive, not happy and safe. So when you're going to try to do something new, your brain doesn't know the outcome. If it doesn't know the outcome, it's going to try and keep you from doing it because it doesn't know if you're going to get hurt emotionally or physically from this new thing. So self-aware, identify the negative thoughts, call yourself out, be like, fuck you. Like, sometimes I'll be like, fuck you, Jimmy, that's not true. Like, I'll yell that shit out in the shower sometimes. And then replace that limiting belief with what I want to believe about myself or about the situation that I'm in. So, you know, like I said before, you can become whoever you want to become. And when you have these negative thoughts creep in, it's your brain trying to keep you in that loop because it thinks it's going to keep you safe. But you can redirect those thoughts into something more powerful and more beneficial for yourself.
God, I love that. That's so fun. I kind of do that subconsciously. Like if I'm in the gym and I'm not doing as well as I want, I'm like, Chase, you piece of shit, rep it out. And then I'll boom, boom. But that's crazy. It's just, it's the whole shift. You got to, even if there is a negative thought and you're losing confidence, just turn it on its head. Every reaction has an opposite reaction. So if you get like negative, you can get that much positive just as fast. It's just, it's all a mental game.
Yeah, dude. And it really is, man. And you ever been in a bad mood, asked the girl out and she said yes, or did this or that. And all of a sudden, like, you're in a great mood, like you're happy, da 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 da. Like, people don't realize they can create that shit anytime they want internally, right? Through visualization, through your breath, through your focus, through your physiology and moving your body, right? So you can always control what state that you're in. You don't always have to rely on external things to dictate your state. And once you really learn how to control the state that you're in through controlling your thoughts, you're fucking limitless, man.
Boom. Fucking boom. Oh, man. Jimmy, this has been an absolutely incredible. This has been the longest episode on this podcast by far. And
it's felt like 10 minutes, bro, to be honest.
Exactly. I literally just looked up at my thing. I'm like, oh shit, it's been an hour and a half. Damn. I mean, this has been absolutely amazing, Jimmy. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
If anybody wants to reach out to you or connect with you in any way possible, like, how can they go about doing so?
So my website is Jimmy DeFalco, JimmyDeFalco.com. And my Instagram handle is Jimmy_DeFalco. If anyone's interested in coaching or having me come speak to their company, organization, university, school, whatever it is, go ahead, hop on my website, fill out the forms, and I'll be in touch shortly. Or just, you can shoot me a DM on Facebook, or on Facebook it's Jimmy DeFalco as well, or Instagram, and I'll get in contact.
Perfect. Y'all heard it here, guys. Go hit him up now. I mean, this guy is, he's gonna be the NLP guy. He's gonna be the motivational guy within the next couple of years. You just wait.
Yes, sir.
So, everybody, thank you for listening to this episode. Jimmy, thank you for coming on today's show. And until next time, everybody, stay healthy, get wealthy. Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy Show. My name is Chase Henderfit. I am your host. And if you have any questions at all, feel free to DM me on Instagram at Chase_Henderfit. And I have one favor to ask. Please just share this episode with one person. You never know who it could help impact. And if you share it on your Instagram story, I'll repost it on mine. So until next time, stay healthy. Get wealthy.